The other piece that I just wanted to mention real quick is at the June 28th board meeting, the board passed a resolution allowing us to enter into a contract with Blue Technologies for copier services. I wanted to report back to the board to make sure everyone is on the same page. As it was initially proposed, we were looking at financing the copy machines through what's called a government lease purchase over a five-year period with a $1 buyout. As we really started, you know, analyzing it, I firmly believe it's in our best interest to do an outright purchase of the machines. The machines themselves are about $100,000. With the lease purchase, we were paying almost 4% interest, which is really about double what we're getting on our investments. So we would see a negative interest or negative arbitrage there that would not benefit the district. Additionally, as we look through jumping through some of the legal hoops of having the lease purchase, getting a legal opinion on it and things like that that you're typically required to do, that would also add a few thousand dollars worth of cost to it. So right now we have a PI cash on hand, or we finished last year cash on hand with PI with about $500,000. Today we got another infusion of the advancement coming in from the county. I'm very comfortable with using $100,000 of that to purchase them outright. We would save about $14,000 in interest over the five-year period, and it changes no other aspect of the contract. It's just saying we're going to buy the machines up front instead of using a finance company to do the lease purchase over 5 years. So if everyone's okay with that, or if you had questions about that, let me know. But we'd like to sign off on that as early as tomorrow to get these in by the end of the month. So,
do we need a vote on that?
No, we don't need a formal vote on it. No, because the board already approved the contract, allowing us to enter into the contract, so we don't need a formal vote. But I wanted to make sure that we were upfront with you and let you know.
I'm fine with it.
To put it in perspective, we've also, this copy contract is a really, really good one, and we're, so for example, how much are we paying per year now?
So right now, under the contract that we're just finishing, it's about $125,000 a year.
A year.
Okay, a year. Now that's both the leasing of the machines and then the service, toner, all of those types of things, the maintenance, all of that. In the new one, we're looking at about $100,000 initial investment for the machines themselves. We are looking at purchasing some software with it, which is PaperCut, to help track copies that are being used by person, hopefully over the long term start reducing some of our copying as we can track it a little bit better. And then also in the agreement, we're looking at purchasing the school gate guardian that we talked about at the elementary school and an attendance piece at the high school, so that when people walk into the elementary school, they would swipe their driver's license. And it does a quick background check against the state of Ohio sex offender registry. Or I'm sorry, the National Sex Offender Registry. And then it prints a little ID badge for them. If they don't have a license, or if they don't have it with them, we would just work with the secretary would work with them to register them. But that way we know who's walking our building. You know, and we'd be testing it at the elementary school. If it works good there and we're happy, we can always add more later. But we would test it at the elementary school with the new elementary. So this would be all those built in. But so what would happen is the initial investment that we have for the machines, but then our annual service cost would be estimated about $25,000. So
we're signing a separate agreement, or the service agreement that you're
the service signing. Agreement is part of Blue. So we have the purchase side of it, and then we have the service agreement. Okay. So we're doing the initial purchase and a five-year service agreement. And so that $25,000 a year is, again, down from, you know, nearly 125 that we're paying right now. So we see a significant savings on the service side of it, as well as the machine side.
So in a five-year period, we're saving a couple $100,000.
We're saving a lot of money over the five-year period, yeah. Yeah, because when we were going to finance it, we were projecting it, I think, $45,000 a year. So going from 125 down to 45, okay? Now we're going to, so you're saving, you know, $80,000 there over your 5 years, so you're $400,000 there, plus the interest that we save on top of that. So yeah, you're saving a pretty big chunk of money.
Especially compared to what we're paying right now.
Compared to what we're paying right now, yeah. And Blue was Dave did a real nice job, put it together, an RFP request for proposals, sent them out to a number of companies. They had, I think Scott had explained it before as well, they had a team go out and look at different machines, get their feedback. We looked at staying the status quo with ComDoc for the machines. The pricing would obviously change, but the machines. But Blue came in, met with Scott, Dave, and I has had Scott and Dave go out and actually see the machines in another location. They are the lowest price. We do feel comfortable with switching vendors. It is a very sizable savings, and we think it'll have that benefit to the district over the long term. A little bit of a transition as people learn the new machines,
yeah.
But
you know,
with PaperCut, they're all going to be the same software.
Correct. Yeah. So
it wouldn't have mattered if we went with the current one or the old. The display is going to be the same when you switch to PaperCut.
Yeah, that's awesome. Quick question, and I know you probably are already kind of thinking through and haven't gotten to a point where you really know, but what happens? Somebody is a sex offender. What happened, you know, how are we going to deal with that potentially? I mean, is it just the sex offender registry that it goes through, or is it complete? Does this person have a record that, and then how does that?
So the national database that it searches is the sex offender registry.
Okay.
We have, the nice thing is, we then have the ability to load our own database. And so what would happen is when we get information that there could be a restraining order, mm-hmm. when we get information that a parent doesn't have custody, mm-hmm. or when they have custody, you can log in mm-hmm. their days and those type of things. It can come up and say it's not this person's day. Mm-hmm. You know, so we have that information that is put in there. The nice,
wonderful.
Yes,
it's so helpful.
Well, and it's one of those to where when you start to think about running a building that has 1,200 kids in it without having the software, and then we think about we by the way, the receptionist we hired, and I know Joe knows her, Barbara Hall. She's just such an impressive person.
I worked with her.
Oh, really?
Well, just on PTA stuff back when we're both old. Back in the day.
Yeah.
So she'll be
dynamic. She'll be fantastic with it. But I think the other part is you also have subs. You know, so let's say she's out or somebody's breaking her or
she
something.
She doesn't know everybody.
Yeah, and so people will come in with that. So being able to do it without this type of thing, I think, would be, I'm very pleased that we were in a position to get that. So one of the things that would happen, and I'll talk about it a little bit, where our intent is to have it in the vestibule. So that a person has to do this prior to coming in and standing in front of the receptionist. So if, let's say somebody does come up, then an alert will show up on the receptionist's computer, and then she can click a button that will send an alert to any phone number we want. Principal, school resource officer, anybody who we feel is relevant for that. In those type of situations, we want to have, and I've talked to the police department about this, who, by the way, they're very excited about this as well, to where we would have the resource officer approach the person and be able to talk to them.
And
about
that's
that
very
as well.
Helpful.
You don't want this type of situation for a receptionist to be sitting down when this person's irate over a custody issue, because that's most likely what we're going to be dealing with the most, is an issue of custody. And the other nice thing is we also in our database we could put in who the approved people are to come pick up a child.
Mm-hmm.
So you know it you scan
you
it.
You have to go look up the cards.
Right. So if grandma, in. So if you were going to pick up one of your grandchildren and you swipe it in, then it will show up. Yes, this is Barb Lozinski. She mm-hmm. is an approved person to pick it up. Another neat thing in there is the fact that appointments. So when you have, for example, if somebody has a dentist appointment and they send a note in, then they log it into the system and the receptionist would get reminders that, this person is going to get picked up at this particular time, and then there's the list of the people who are permitted to. So it's...
Wow.
Yeah.
Will that be functioning when school starts, or is that...
That's our goal. We want it, and we really want... I want it to be functioning by day one, and one of the reasons for it is if it functions week two or month two, then people will say, back to the communication, what happened? Why do we need this now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, did something happen the first two weeks of school that we don't know about? You know, it's something I want to have it there day one. That's part of our communication we're sending out as well, that we're looking at about what's going to be different inside the school. And it doesn't just take driver's license, it takes state IDs, it takes military IDs. And I know Liz and I talked about it a little bit, and one of the answers is it does gather information, but the only thing it takes from you, it's not looking to steal your identity in any type of way. The only thing it takes is your name and your birthday, and then Real Estate will compare those to the databases.
Passport IDs?
You know what, I don't know.
Your passport ID?
But I think that, not the paper one, but I'm...
Many carry their...
Yeah, but I think it might take the card. I think it could read that from the card.
I never thought about that.
And we did talk about the fact if somebody shows up without an ID, we had, when we were walking around and touring, the police were interested in that if somebody did show up, that they would check them. They would then get their information and do that, so.
And the plan is then, if it's successful at elementary, the other buildings will soon?
Well, the high school's gonna use a version of it because their tardy software is very out of date. And so I'll give you an example. So let's say that, and I think the high school is a great place for it too, because you have people coming in to buy football tickets. They're coming in, you know, to talk to students about colleges. You have different people coming in. So we're gonna start it over at, in the attendance area. The software they're using for the tardy database for logging kids in, it's very antiquated. I don't think they're doing any more updates to it. We need to get something different. So we're gonna, this has that feature as well. So we're gonna start it over in the attendance area in the high school. And if it goes well, if this checks out and it's something that we like, then it's really not a significant cost because it's under one roof. It's just adding it to another computer. So it's not a significant cost to then, you know, let's say we don't wanna do a kiosk, but we wanna do a desktop version at the high school. You know, to where it's on the countertop and people come in and check in. We may hate the kiosk. We may, and you know, looking at it originally, I like the kiosk because it checks people before they enter in and get access to our staff. But we may say, yeah, but you know, that I get that, but in application, it's better to have it on the counter. So we'll kind of see where it goes from there, but the cost is gonna be less because we already have the software on the high school. So if it does work out in DIS, we don't really have a vestibule, you know, to do that in other than the one on the side, so it would have to be a countertop. We're gonna pilot it at the elementary school, see how we like it. Another neat thing that it has, which I think people are gonna fight over, are those little key tabs, you know, like you have from Giant Eagle. Uh-huh. So if you have people who are always in the building, they don't have to keep putting their driver's mm-hmm. license in, like you have a classroom mom, a PTA president mm-hmm. or something, they go in and they scan their little mm-hmm. grocery nice. Type of thing, and then it recognizes them and they get a quick sticker. So
that's cool.
But it's all part of the blue package, and I think and that was Todd. Todd investigated it all and really said, you know, I think we should buy it outright because, you know, we're already paying $125,000 a year. We pay $100,000, then the copiers are ours, and we just have to pay our service, and will not only save us in general, but it'll save us 14% in interest. Mm-hmm. I think that's awesome. Good man.
Very good. Thank you.
So we're on.
Curriculum.
There's nothing to report. And we have community outreach.
Community outreach. Our new neighbor, Porter Public Library, is having a party. You all received an invitation for the 29th, 6 to 8. And if you have the opportunity to attend that ice cream social right mm-hmm. next door to our new building, I think that'd be fantastic. I think you all do a fantastic job of reaching out to the community. There can never be too much communication, in my opinion. One of those means of communication is by sending out a note to all of our parents, all the folks that are part of that want to be on our email list. And you know that we generate that email after each of our board meetings. And I know Kim helps us with that. I just want to make certain that will continue. And as our president and superintendent, I assume that communication will continue, just another means of communicating what happens at our board meetings.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Awesome. Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay. Dr. Goggin, you are up with superintendent recommendations.
I just have one. Yeah, and typically I wouldn't put some staffing recommendations at a work session. However, we do have two preschool positions to fill, and one of them is employed with another school district. So she did have to resign by July 10th. And so I didn't want to have her sitting all through July, you know, waiting for board approval as she's without a job. So I did want to put it on. And then that's Victoria Matika, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, but she and I did sit down and we talked, and she is currently with the Streetsboro Schools, really, really sharp lady. She's really excited to have her come in. And Lisa, she works for us currently as an assistant inside our preschool. She has been a fully licensed teacher and has taught preschool in the past. And I really enjoyed talking to her because she has, it's not often you get a person who was a teacher and then moves into an assistant role. And I think that that is very unique and is going to give her a perspective that's really going to serve her well. And she's going to be working itinerant. And so having been in a classroom and being able to be both the teacher and then another point be the assistant, you get to see the different roles that happen and how that plays out inside a classroom. Mm-hmm. And I also think it's a credit to her because many times you can have a teacher who has an assistant who's just as degreed as you are, and that can be intimidating, but she doesn't have that demeanor to where she is very collaborative and able to work with people. So these two folks, we already have a really nice preschool team, mm-hmm. and I just think putting these two folks in there is really going to make it better. So that's why I put them on. I wasn't just going to put Tori on and not put Lisa on. You know, mm-hmm. Lisa, she works for us, so the July 10th isn't a big deal, but why leave her out since mm-hmm. I'm putting Tori on anyway? So mm-hmm. that's it.
Okay, so is there a motion to approve superintendent recommendation 4A?
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion or questions? Roll call, please.
Winter?
Yes.
Finucane?
Yes.
Kraft?
Yes.
Lozinski?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, treasurer recommendation.
All right, thank you. I also just have one on the agenda tonight. This is transportation deemed impractical that we've spoken about, I believe, most recently at the June meeting. I want to say June 10th, but I could be off on that. First and foremost, I want to state that, you know, the district certainly wants to provide transportation services to all of our residents. Both we have the want to do that. We also have a responsibility to do so. But under the law, we do have the responsibility to do it in a fiscally responsible way. And so as we were looking at it this year and the different routes that we're running, and this is solely speaking to private schools and community schools, okay? This is not about students attending Westlake schools and being bused to Westlake schools. This is about students who choose alternate schools from Westlake. So that's either a private school or a community school. And this would not be for students who qualify as with special needs. So this is solely about typical students who choose to attend a school other than Westlake schools. We want to make sure that we're providing that transportation in a fiscally responsible way. So at the June 10th board meeting, and I believe it was June 10th, but I presented the board with some information, a spreadsheet that I do have it attached on the agenda here if anyone wanted to bring it up. And it looked at on the schools that we're currently providing transportation to and how many eligible riders there are, how many actual riders there were done in the official count week that was done this past October. We also looked at the past 5 years of official count weeks to get a five-year average, and then we factored in what our actual costs are involved, and ultimately bringing it down to what is our average annual cost per pupil for actual riders that are on our buses. So as we looked at this, you know, obviously there are some that are very, very, you know, expensive. So we delved into what would it look like to deem these routes impractical and work through that process. And the process is simply this. The board would act on this recommendation tonight in an affirmative vote. After this vote tomorrow, what we would do is we would send out two pieces of information to all of the students who would be affected by this. And those two pieces of information are also attached for you to see in the resolution there. One would be a letter And this letter, I have it coming from me, but it's coming from the district, and it's basically a template that we're reusing from ODE. It goes through and talks about, we've reviewed transportation, we're under the law, we're allowed to revise it, I'm sorry, we're allowed to deem it impractical for one or more of six reasons, and those six reasons are the time and distance required to provide transportation, the number of pupils to be transported, the cost of providing transportation in terms of equipment, maintenance, personnel, and administration, whether similar or equivalent services provided to other pupils eligible for transportation, whether and to what extent the additional service unavoidably disrupts current transportation schedules, and whether other reimbursable types of transportation are available. Those are the six areas that we're allowed to look at for deeming it impractical. And the state is very straightforward in how they do this. We deem it impractical. We send this letter out to them. We also send a form to them. And in the form, it's just listing that the board has passed this as a resolution as deeming it impractical. These are your students in the school that are attending. And then they can either accept this, and by accepting it, they accept the fact that they would make sure that they're responsible for transporting their student to this alternate school. And in return for that, they would receive a reimbursement from the district based on a state set rate. And I believe, if I'm correct, on fiscal year 19, it was about $250. I think it was exactly $250. That can change on an annual basis. The state sets that, but that's what it has been for the past few years at least. Or they can reject this offer as well. And by rejecting it, they would then request from the superintendent of schools and the area coordinator, which is the local office of the Ohio Department of Education, mediation to go over this. Mediation is really a fact-finding. And so what we would do is we would go and meet with the area coordinator and say, here, you know, this is why we're doing it. We have, you know, in some cases here, we have one student being transported. It's not practical for us to transport one student. Now, they would make their case as well, okay? If we can't come to an agreement through mediation, it actually goes to the Ohio, State of Ohio Board of Education for them to make a final determination. So it's a process that we work through, and but it does allow parents to appeal. So if we have, you know, we would work through this process, we would hear the mediation, the appeal process. We could, at that time, say, okay, you know what, we'll just keep providing transportation, or no, we, you know, if they can't agree to it, no, we'll appeal to, we don't have to appeal, they would have to appeal to the Ohio Department of Education if we don't come into an agreement on it. But I think in a lot of these cases where we're transporting just a handful of students, and again, from some of these, you know, remember, you know, we're transporting 1, 2, 4, 8 kids to these different schools. And those become pretty straightforward where it's very, very impractical for the costs involved. And I think we have a very, very, very strong case going to, even if we went to the State Board of Education. You know, on some of them, we're talking about 10 or 15. Again, this is average numbers. We're not sure how many would actually come back and reject the offer. If all 15 reject the offer, we can just say, okay, hey, what? We'll back out. We'll still provide transportation. No big deal. Okay. If only 2 of them reject the offer, again, now we have a very strong case, even if they would want to go to a mediation or take it to the state, we have a very strong case to defend that in front of the state of Ohio. So it's an ongoing process, and it's going to take a little bit of time, but we would send out the letter. The letter would be due back to us by August 10th. We'd give about 3 weeks for them to go through and make that determination, and then we'd be able to get our numbers in and know exactly where we stand on the students for these 7 schools that we've identified as being potentials. And those schools are St. Brendan, Lakewood Catholic Academy, Albert Einstein Academy, Lake Ridge Academy, St. Paul, St. Angela, St. Christopher, and Holy Trinity. Actually, it's 8. 8 schools. So it's the 8 schools that we'd be looking at identifying as impractical.
What was after St. Paul, St.
Christopher? St. Paul, St. Angela, St. Christopher, and then Holy Trinity. And when we look at it, and the reason, you know, one of the reasons that we're doing it, and really the main reason that we're doing it, is we're looking at it for a couple, the 2 reasons we're identifying for the most part is, one is the number of students being transported. Again, we don't view it as being responsible transporting, you know, 1, 2, you know, 4, 5, 10 kids, you know, on our buses. The second reason of it is when we look at the overall cost. So when we look at those eight routes, you know, we're looking at a significant cost savings to the district of several hundred or a couple hundred thousand dollars on an annual basis that, you know, the district would not have to put out for those transportation costs. And that takes into consideration the money that we would expend paying the parents directly as well. So, you know, it has a financial incentive for us. Again, we're not doing it solely from the financial perspective. We understand we have a responsibility to transport. We want to transport our residents. That's not what this is about, okay? What it's about is we want to make sure that we're doing it in a fiscally responsible way so that we're not sending out buses with a handful of students and spending, you know, in some cases on the very extreme, when we look at this last year, we were spending, you know, nearly $24,000 to transport one kid to one of the private schools. And I think that's, you know, pretty impractical to continue to do.
And the definition of fiscally responsible is left up to the district?
It's left up to the district. Ultimately, it could be, you know, decided by the Ohio Department of Education, or I'm sorry, the Ohio State Board of Education. You know, if it carries on that far, they would make that determination. You know, we've looked at it, and the way that we're determining it is we said, okay, what is the average cost to transport a Westlake student to a school in Westlake? And that we identified last year was a little under, I'm sorry, not last year, last numbers that we have available, FY18, was just under $1,700. I think when I looked at the average, it was right around that average, $1,600, $1,700. So we're saying, hey, you know, when we look at them, we know there could be some variance, we know there could be some play, but if it's costing more than $2,000 per student to transport, you know, we may want to look at deeming it impractical. And that's where those eight schools are all costing over $2,000 per pupil to transport.
Because that's probably one of the main questions that's going to be raised. What was your objective decision-making criteria? Although there are a lot of things, but it's going to come down to being fiscally responsible. Yep. What's your definition of that?
Yep.
What does it cost us to transport the Westlake?
About $1,700, give or take, yeah. $1,643 is what it was in FY18. It varies every year. But, you know, correct. That's all costs included. That's mechanics, drivers, the administration in the transportation department, fuel, you know, repairs, all that type of fun stuff.
And your letter would refer to the code. It would not include the code as part of the letter. Is that accurate?
So the code, it starts off by...
I have it in front of me.
Okay. Yeah, so it refers to Ohio Revised Code.
Include the version of the code in the letter sent.
No, I mean, you know, somebody could look up the code per se. If you'd like me to send that, I mean, it would just be an additional printout.
Yeah. And the dollar amount, should parents accept that?
So the reason we don't have it listed specifically in the letter is because it is determined annually by Ohio Department of Education. So I could put in there, you know, it was set for FY19, you know, at 250, but because I don't know what it will be for the upcoming year,
right,
I don't want to give a false number.
Right.